This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Body Count, a history podcast where we gab about death and disaster through the ages, highlighting figures, single events, time periods, culture, whatever it may be that resulted in someone, or is, as usually the case, a lot of someone's dying. I am your host, Jessica Manor, joined as always by my co-host. Introduce yourself.
Bethany Skelton, as always. Hello.
And Kara DiDomizio, tuning in. And we have a guest, do we not, tonight, Jessica?
We're hashtag jazz. Although really quickly, I want to enter, as always, with you guys' introduction. Once again, a perfect study in bipolar disorder. And I'm always really excited by that. Like, I think it's great. So, our wonderful and illustrious guest, please do introduce yourself.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Brenda, and I am the host of Horrifying History. And Horrifying History is a podcast where I like to say history, the supernatural, lore, and science collides. What we do is take a different look at things. We look at things in more in an investigative way, in the sense that we look at, firstly, let's just say it's a ghost story. Well, let's say what history tells us. Let's see what the documentation tells us. Is this story possibly true? And what does the lore tell us as hints towards that? And if we can bring science into it, we do. So we allow everybody to make up their own minds on what the truth actually is. We can be found on any major podcast provider like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you find your own podcasts. And you can also hear us on our YouTube channel, which is found by looking up Horrifying History. Or you also can find us on Facebook by searching Horrifying History, Instagram at Horrifying_History, and on Twitter at HorrifyingHIST1. And I also have an email address, as much as you all have one too. It's HorrifyingHistory@Outlook.com.
Wow. Oh my God. That Damn. Was a winner.
You said that in one breath. What the hell?
I've done it before. Once or twice.
Once or twice.
So it's something a little bit different we've had as a guest here on this podcast yet, but I love the podcast so much. One, I think it's ridiculously good. And two, you know so much about some ridiculous body counts that result in the haunting themselves, that I had to have this happen, and we had to have this happen. Honestly, your name came up very first when we decided to do our
I think I literally was like,
Brenda. Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you for that compliment. And I actually, since I'm going to be doing this and it's on air, I wanted to thank you guys actually personally. Because each and every one of you have done so much for the community, history community, especially online, and how you guys work together, it really has pulled together quite nicely. And I'm a podcast of a different type of history per se. You see a lot of the classical stuff out there. I'm a little unique. I look at the dark side, you know, matches my dark heart and all. So it's very nice to be welcomed into the history genre with you guys, and how much you promote history. I absolutely love it. And I think you guys have done so much for that. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, awesome.
Oh my gosh.
I don't do much for history, you know.
You have.
I told you Brenda is the purest person I've probably engaged with online.
I am positively blushing. And based on this show, that's hard to do. I spent all of yesterday talking about people being inseminated with monkey sperm. And you still got a blush out of me. So, you know.
That's historical. In 10 years, they'll be like, do you remember when we were inseminating people with monkey sperm? And they're like, oh, yeah, I do remember that. See, it's historical. It counts.
It was a lot of fun. It was a fun portion of history. But let's go ahead and get to, I know what we were going to talk about first before we get to all the fun parts is a little bit we like your research style, Brenda, and we like how it's a bit varied and how you jump into things, because you don't just look at the history of something. You have to look at it comprehensively. You're taking the Bachelor of Science in The Bachelor of the Art, and you're making the two marry and make a research baby. So let's talk a little bit about that for a minute.
Well, actually, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, that I had to think about it a little bit and why I actually think that way. And I think it's because my career of choice, I wish it was podcasting, but it actually is the healthcare field. And I started originally in frontline healthcare, but then I decided to evolve and go into being an analyst for healthcare data. And within that role, of course, what do? You research. And I actually became involved very quickly, luckily for me, in the highest level of investigation for the organization I was working for. So we had about, well, we have about 150,000 employees, so they keep me busy. And basically, if it comes across my desk, you can expect the press to be calling in about 20 minutes. It's those type of cases. So I think that is why I take more of an analytical investigation-based approach to episodes. It's because that is just how my brain works. And a lot of people ask me on how I actually get my ideas, because they're really vast. Like, for example, I mentioned before, I did an episode that just came out a couple days ago on spontaneous human combustion. I've done episodes on being buried alive. I've done ghost stories. I do a little bit of everything. So what I actually do, this sounds crazy a little bit, but what I do is I grab a piece of paper and I just brainstorm ideas. I just write down ideas and thoughts and stories that have interested me, that I've always wondered about, questions. And then I look at these ideas and see what the topic is. And a lot of times, believe it or not, as I'm doing the brainstorming, that's where the topic, the actual name of the show comes out. Because, like, for example, I did one on who do some voodoo. That literally was the idea, that on my brainstorming idea, who do some voodoo, because I thought it sounded cool. So I actually then start to compile them into a theoretical episode name or idea. Then I actually kind of start tracking them to put them down as names and dates. So I actually, believe it or not, have my episodes planned all the way through season 9. I know that sounds crazy, but I have. So then when I actually prepare to research and write an episode, I actually start to do just like a little bit of a brief little investigation just to try to see what's out there for it, how easy the source is. And it really depends on, like, for example, like how much is available. Is it going to be a main episode? Is it going to be a bonus shorter episode? But it also at times does change the actual episode itself and the trajectory of the episode. For example, I did another one. I wanted to do something about and I called it, because I had the cool idea of the name, Horrifying Side of Haiti, because I thought that sounded kind of cool. And I actually thought it was going to be like more ghost stories and this and that. But it actually, when I started doing the original little research, I actually realized I wanted to flip it and do it more of a historical base of how voodoo was really persecuted to make it look dark. How that country and how it developed changed the ideology of that religion to make it appear something that isn't. And what is the bigotry and racism that made that happen? Right. So it actually took a whole different idea that I originally planned. So when I'm actually ready to do my research, I kind of do what everybody else does, I think, locate and evaluate your source materials. You study to make sure it's valid, see if there's any backup sources to collaborate. And I'll bring it to you guys. And I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me. I do this because, again, that's the background I come from, is analytics and study and research. But my biggest pet peeve about podcasts or blogs or anything, websites, is they'll use source material that is like Wikipedia, BuzzFeed.
Oh, you're speaking to Jessica's soul right now.
I got the piss quivers when you said, Wikipedia. No.
Wikipedia does have its place. But I have heard a lot of podcasts that will say, my source is Wikipedia. Well, that's just, if you don't know what Wikipedia is, it's just a bunch of random guys writing down stuff. That's what it is. Is it true?
Finding secondary sources is useful for what it is, right? For going in and finding at the bottom of it.
Basic ideas.
Different places where you can start from, right? But like you said, if that's what you're basing your entire anything on, I don't care if it's a video, if it's a book or whatever, then I'm a little concerned about anyone's evaluation from that point.
I admit to something horrible that I do, you guys? I have a Wikipedia account and I go on and I fuck up historical. I always put something rando in there.
You're my hero.
When I am stressed out.
Historical desecrator.
I'm going to totally do that.
My whole life is historical methods. Okay. I live by them. And Brenda does too. I think that's funny that everybody always kind of shits on history because it is very much a humanities, but it's only a humanities in the best we can source things. It's not always a scientific truth. Exactly. Where it has more in common with the other side of learning than it does necessarily with the humanities, given the information that we have. But methods works in a very analytical way. And so because I hate podcasts that do that, and I can't help myself because I'm a human shit, I always get on. And it's only one sentence. It's always something like just vaguely off, because then the gross part of me tries to listen to podcasts and go, where am I going to hear this in a history podcast?
I think I've got a new hobby. That sounds, Jessica, a lot of fun.
Okay, here's what we have to do for Jessica. We have to monitor the Winston Churchill page, because I guarantee you this is going to be where she's at. That's going to be her, like, desecration page. And if anything, just to piss off her colleagues.
By the time that you finish everything somewhere in Wikipedia, and it's hard with Winston Churchill because I've tried already and it gets rejected, but I'm going to sneak in there somewhere and bomb civilians, because it's been a real argument I've had archivally lately, and to be like, oh yeah, and he bombed the fuck out of civilians, just to see what happens, just to see what I can do to the world.
That's too funny.
If I see it, it's going to be hilarious, and it just makes my day, y'all. It's such a stress reliever. You know, I've got the smoking and the drinking, but sometimes that just doesn't scratch my itch for chaos. And, you know, you got to fuck up a Wikipedia page. Nothing makes me happier. I've really tried on Edward VIII, but they really monitor that shit. Thank you. And the monarchy doesn't have power. No, never. But that that being said, let's go ahead. Because one, I think your research methods are awesome. The first time I really dove into the show hardcore parkour was the Disney episodes. Because like I told you on Twitter, I immediately, every time my daughter makes me watch Frozen, which I absolutely despise, the first thing I did was go to my bookshelf and go, hello, Hans Christian Andersen. Let's ruin this. Like, let's go ahead.
Oh,
here we go.
Little Mermaid, aren't you? Little Mermaid.
No, I'm talking about the story of the Ice Queen, which is actually what Elsa is based off of.
Yeah, Frozen's based on that. Yeah.
I hate Frozen as a concept.
I haven't watched it because, I don't know, it just seems so overdone. And so, princess, I'm swirling around with my hoop skirts. And that's what it bugs me. This sounds horrible. No offense, Disney. Please don't come after me. But what bugs me about Disney, it's so Disneyfied. It's like all the girls are you know, ready to have the ready to pass out any moment in their hoop skirts. And they're so virtuous. And they're so wronged by the evil. And the men have so much valor. And it's such a line of crap. I read all the original ones literally in kindergarten. Okay, my parents were not normal, but I read all the originals in kindergarten, and I'm like, no, that it's all about death and destruction and like murdering and such. What the hell? It's not. The world doesn't work this way. I'm more of an honest person, so I actually finished writing my part two to that because apparently people really liked it. So I did the part two about the story of Beauty and the Beast, because that personally just bugs the heck out of me that, you know, Emma Watson swirling around in her hoop skirts with a beast that isn't really beastie, and she's like looking at him with longing eyes. That's not how it worked. It was about arranged marriages. Come on, people.
So I also feel like that live action movie has gotten a generation of people into bestiality, which is also problematic, just in and of itself.
Team Gastel.
God, he was so hot. I mean, no one spits like Gaston. No one, you know, like, how are you going to top Gaston? No
one has a neck as thick as Gaston. Okay. Like,
you know, I would eat off Gaston. Just saying. I would take shots out of Gaston's belly button all day long.
Here's why I have a problem with Gaston. He's all like, he comes up to the house and he just presumes that this chick is like, oh yeah, I'm hot. She's totally going to marry me. Yeah, it's just going to happen.
Right, but you know what?
Dude, you're a narcissist. You're not that hot. Where's your, but how much money do you got in the bank? How much bills do you have? Let's just talk about that first.
Exactly. I'm going to need you to fill out
credit rating.
I want a financial statement.
I need to have a swab to get that tested. I need to check your DNA to see if there's any murderers in your past.
I need to check if your DNA is tested.
No. Just coming up to my house and say, hey, baby, you know, my name's Gaston. And I'm pretty sure that you want to marry me doesn't cut it for me.
He's honest. That's an honest male approach. So I kind of respect him more for it.
I respect the narcissism a little bit. But I do respect the fact that the other virgin, the version of the story is a lot darker.
Virgin.
Well, that's actually a big thing. It specifically, there's a line in there, and the reason why the spell breaks with the beast is the fact that she's a virgin. Really? I didn't know that you can test that by breaking magical spells.
Oh, you can't test it that way?
Apparently you can, according to the story.
I think the Catholic Church has been trying it out for years. So, you know, like...
Not just the Catholic Church.
No, just pick a place or a time, and that's pretty much been the... That's been approach.
The next one on my hit list for part three is something you guys mentioned a couple minutes ago. It's the Little Mermaid. I'm going after Ariel next. She's on my hit list.
That ginger's going down.
It's going down.
It's one of my least fave ones, for sure.
Well, if you think about it, I don't know if you have heard the real story behind it, but the reality of it is, it's dark as heck.
Oh, it's bad. It's one of the worst ones, yeah.
Yep. See, I'm working you guys up to the dark. See, I'm trying to be kind.
Hey. You know, that's the one thing you don't have to do on this show, because we just kind of, you know, I believe we talked about bodies being strung around the red square as popcorn strings for Christmas decorations during the time of the Romanovs and the early Romanovs. We had a lot of fun with that. So we've talked about research. Let's get into a little bit of some of the other stuff we wanted to talk about. Let's get our listeners into the vibe of this show. We were talking a couple different things. So what you got for us, Brenda?
Well, what you guys were really curious about is, I think somebody brought up strange, weird deaths.
Oh, on this show? What? Yeah.
No, or torture. I think it was me that was like, I really want to get into torture. I'm not sure why. And no, listeners, that does not imply anything else about any extra
BDSM.
No, I'm
Don't deny it. We know who you are.
We know what you're doing.
Your Pornhub account looks like Ted Bundy's. We know what we're talking about.
We know you got
here.
Fuzzy handcuffs. We know. Don't worry.
Oh, no.
Can I just say, though, when we launched into this, though, Bethany just did the best impression ever of me when you first said that. So let's get into it. Like, I heard you. I heard you underneath that, you smart ass.
So I think let's talk some Elvis, because I don't know. One of the things about the mystique of the king is like the funny fucking way he died. And I'm sorry, Elvis fans.
Okay,
She didn't get off the pot. You know?
First of all, I just want to make this a known fact that Elvis Presley and I share the same birthday, which is this Friday, January 8th.
Oh, shit. Happy birthday!
Wow, that could...
The only reason I know this is while I was staying at home during the summer, I was podcasting for an episode, and my dad just, like, I don't know, is asking random questions because he knows Bethany, and he's known her for fucking 15 years. So he was like, when's Bethany's birthday? How much older is she than you? And I said, well, it's Elvis's birthday. And he was like, that's why I like Bethany, and I don't like very many people.
And I would love to go out like him. I think that would just be hilarious.
I was about to say, the way I want to die.
Well, the thing is, what I find is when the famous people or people who've been celebrated historically die, it actually forces people to confront the fact that they're mortals, right? Like, all of us are mortals. And that's what, like, for example, look at Marilyn Monroe when she went out. People were
that's a good one.
Right, right. It's because people mourn it because they think they put them on this pedestal that they're not people. And I think the death with Elvis proves that, yeah, you're not on a pedestal. You're normal. So when you imagine somebody's final moments, especially these people that are on these pedestals, you just presume that their final moments are going to be as big as their existence was, right? But right. That's not true. They die like the rest of us. And a lot of times their deaths stand out because it happens in ways that they wouldn't want. All of us would like to die peacefully with their family around us, but that doesn't always happen. And with Elvis Presley, as you mentioned, well, he went out in a more original way.
Yeah,
we'll say that. Okay. So on August 16th, 1977, a 911 dispatcher received the call that said that a person at Elvis Presley Boulevard was having difficulty breathing. So an ambulance was dispatched to the location, and the team on board knew when they rolled up that it was the home of Elvis Presley. It's pretty hard to miss, right? So right. when they got to the gates, they were met by one of Elvis's bodyguards, and they who told them, and I quote, "He's upstairs, and I think it's an OD." Now, this is where the rumor moves away from the truth. Now, it is said that the EMTs found Elvis dead while he was sitting on the toilet, and he had a heart attack from straining from constipation. So actually...
That's so relatable.
But actually...
I feel that.
This is why I don't push. I just let it happen.
What a little colace can't fix.
Or a squatty potty. But in actuality... The legend is partially true. Partially true. Elvis was in the bathroom when the paramedics arrived and was passed out on the floor with his pajama bottoms below his knees. Now, I'm just saying, picture it. Is that how you want to go out? Personally, I'm saying no. So he was passed out with his pajama bottoms down. But his autopsy did discover his colon was extremely enlarged and distended, which shows it was signs of chronic constipation. So that part is kind of is true.
That's so probably because of too many drugs.
Well, that's the next thing they found on the investigation into his death. They actually discovered that his personal doctor prescribed him like an array of painkillers and sedatives, including but not limited to cocaine, hydrochloride, Demerol, Quaaludes, and Dilaudid. So all these drugs, but the Dilaudid, were in his system at his death. Now, it's interesting.
Didn't he get an anti-drugs badge from like Nixon or some shit?
Well, it's actually recognized all the drugs in his system combined, and he had a weakened heart previously, and the chronic constipation were all contributors to his death.
Wow.
Now, interestingly, in case those rumors weren't good enough, when Elvis's body was brought into the morgue, this is what a lot of people don't know. An attendant actually discovered a reporter with a camera hiding under a sheet on another table in the morgue. So he was pretending to be a corpse. He was pretending to be a corpse to try to get a photo of Elvis's dead body. Right? So as death goes, it's really not very rock and roll. Like, he was pooping. But it shows two things. One, celebrities are human just like the rest of us. And two, when people look at celebrities as cash cows, they forget they're people too. Sometimes you just need to poop. And poor Elvis wasn't left alone to poop.
Yes. And he wasn't alone to die. Like, that bothers me, right? Like, the last concept that they would do that. That level of dehumanifying in a way because of his celebrity status showed that even
Tupac Shakur. Tupac Shakur, his pictures of his autopsies are still on the internet today. Yeah. I've seen them. It's sad.
Or those photographs of Diana, you know?
Yeah. It's horrible.
Thankfully I haven't seen those, but
although I can say I'm not going to cry about going out on Uppards and Quaaludes jamming out with my clam out. I feel like that's how I need to die.
Well,
based on the what I've built for myself.
It's funny. There's a long story behind it, but the short story is I put a Facebook quiz out years ago, and I said to people, I want people to put down their perfect death with me, because a rumor went around, it's a long story, that I was dead. So I figured, you know, the person I'm going to get my revenge. I'm going to get revenge, and I'm going to put it on Facebook, because the people who are in that area are on my Facebook, and I'm going to clearly show them alive, but I'll get them to come up with the new death, and I'll just spread that as rumors. Why not? It was very disappointing that I had about 70 different responses, and about 10 of them was my brother. But I came up with a new perfect death. I combined a few. So my perfect death is going to be that as I was escaping the police in my white Bronco down the road.
Excellent.
I already had a couple bullet holes in me as I stagger upstairs. I get into the house, I collapse in death, and my dog eats everything except for my middle finger that's sticking straight up.
That was goddamn.
The only thing missing from that is at some point you called Robert Kardashian.
Oh, I'm going out in a blaze of glory, ladies.
Also, speaking of blaze of glory, how about William the Conqueror? Because let's start where it began.
let's get the grandson of Rollo in this mix, man. Let's do this.
So now I told you guys about Elvis, and that's kind of embarrassing. But sometimes an embarrassing death actually adds to a person's fame. So I was going to tell you guys about a case of a man. He actually was from Paris, and his name was Franz. And Franz Heischlich was born in about 1879, and he was an Austrian-French inventor, and he was a parachuting engineer. How can this go wrong, lady?
He
was a tailor. Gets better. He was a tailor. You see where this is going now. But growing up, he was obsessed with the world of aviation. Not like he actually had any education or skill other than being a tailor. But since all the airships, you know, all these balloons and everything was all the rage, and now the airplane was being developed, people were looking for safety precautions for air travel at this time. And in the year 1910, a high-altitude parachute was developed, but there was no low-altitude option at the time. So this is, sorry for the pun, where Franz jumped in, and he wanted to make his mark. So what he decided to do is started to try to develop a low-altitude parachute. So he used his skills as a tailor to create a couple prototypes, and he made something with, like, foldable silk wings. So during his tests, he used mannequins, and these wings were successful in slowing the mannequin body, which is lighter than a human body, hint, hint, down to make it have a soft landing. But then, in 1911, the Aero Club de France offered a prize of 10,000 francs, which was a lot of money back then, for anybody who could create a safe parachute for an aviator that did not weigh more than 25 kilograms or 56 pounds. So Franz's prototype actually was a lot bigger. So he decided to scale them down. It wasn't working out too well. So what he decided to do is create what he called a parachute suit. Where can this come from? Well, it's a flight suit that he put rods in it and rubber lining that held a canopy. So what he decided to do is test this thing out. So he broke his leg trying. But he believed that it was because the height that he was jumping from was not high enough. Because that makes sense. For the next year, he decides to lobby the Parisian police department to allow him to test his device from the Eiffel Tower. So they said, it's only going to be on the first stage. It should be fine. So they agreed to let him do it on February 4th, 1912. By the way, check it out. There's pictures of this on the internet. You shouldn't laugh. You shouldn't laugh, but you will. Now, to give credit to the police, they're under the impression that Franz was actually going to do the experiment with a dummy, right? But they were shocked when he showed up that day and he put on the suit and he's like, hey, guys, I'm going to jump myself. It's going to be all cool. He was actually...
You know what? That's commitment, though. He believed in the product.
But then he was quoted to have said, telling the police, I want to try the experiment myself without any trickery, and I intend to prove the worth of my invention. So that is dedication, like you said. So as people said to him, hey, dude, bad idea, don't do it. Franz said, and I quote, You're going to see how my 72 kilos and my parachute will give your arguments the most decisive denials. You got to love that confidence, seriously. But the problem is this time.
I wish I'm
early big dick energy.
I really, really wish I oozed that kind of confidence on like everything. Like even
Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson wished he had that shit. He wouldn't have lost Ariana Grande then. Okay. So
well, the problem is the suit didn't work. So if you're gonna be confident, it should actually work, right? So he goes up to that first platform, and after yelling out a cheerful, "See ya soon," he jumps off the 187-foot stage. As his parachute folded around his body, he fell to his death. He had a crushed arm, a leg, broken spine, a broken skull, and abrasions all over his face, and was pronounced dead at the scene with his eyes open, supposedly in terror.
Now, that freaks me out the most out of it, to be honest, is death. The eye-opening thing.
But they got pictures of this. So because there was pictures of this, because
I'm looking at these right now in real time. And I'm so
now he's a worldwide spectacle because of how he died and because how his fall was caught on film and it was shown around the world. Now, he did not win the money. He didn't get the invention of his dreams, but he made his mark in history because, well, that big dick quality that you talked about ended up in his death. those photos are very real, aren't they?
They are horrifying.
A little bit funny, but horrifying. Yeah, that would be a good way to describe it.
When you see the picture of his so-called parachute suit,
dude, it was a bad idea.
It was a horrible idea.
Why did he not have one person in his life that was like maybe a dummy first man? Like,
oh no, his suit was going to work. It's fine. He wanted that money.
And governments around the world took out a quill, dipped it in, and said, not that one.
They've got it on, like, you know, the ring, you know, like the loops of videos where they show it just over and over. It's literally right here. I honestly need to just turn my camera. But it's on.
Yep. There he goes. Yes!
Oh my god! Oh my god! Guys, I encourage you, please go look this up. That is the most horrifyingly wonderful thing I've ever seen in my life. He drops like a fucking stone, man.
And what does it tell about me as a person? But what does it tell about me as a person? The first time I seen that video, I started laughing my butt off. I think I peed myself.
Oh, sorry. I was just trying to be polite because we got to guess. What I want to do is laugh. And I thought, oh, that'll be a bad taste. We've got somebody here other than Bethany and Kara.
Now, when I was a kid, I thought about jumping off the roof once or twice, you know, try to see if I could fly like Superman, but I didn't because I figured out at like 6 that was a bad idea. Just put it out there.
Maybe he just never hit that point of cognitive, like.
You know, I learned not to do that when I shoved my cousin off the roof onto a trampoline, completely missed the pool based on the heights, and broke his arm.
Oh my god,
Jessica! I would totally.
He was
my
little too.
Off the roof
it was pretty fucked up.
Okay. But, I bet you
but yeah, no.
I would do it.
Oh, it's a great idea. Everybody that's older is going, no, it's a great idea. And I'm like, let's test it and just shove, because I fully believed it was a great idea and shoved a tiny, you know, tinier 9 or 10 year old child off of a roof onto a trampoline. And he hit right on the side of the in-ground pool at my grandparents' house. So
here's the thing, back to this Franz person. As I'm watching this loop over and over as this man plunges to his death, I think
it's pretty funny.
I think that it actually might have worked if he had gone up higher because he didn't even have time for the parachute to expand. Or he just
wraps around him like a cocoon and down he goes.
I know. Maybe if I had a little more time to expand and like.
Can I say hashtag physics is hard, yo?
Well, the next one I wanted to tell you guys about, firstly, you guys are going to very much know his name. And secondly, physics does have a little bit to do with this, I guess, when it comes to expansion and gases. But
I know where we're going.
Yeah, the next guy on my list is, so his death I would consider not only embarrassing, but actually a massive example of karma. So what's your guys' thoughts on William the Conqueror? Good guy or douchebag? Which one was he?
Both. Can he not be both at the same time? He was a bastard that became like the first Norman King of England. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a fan. Here's the sad thing about me, and you will learn this. I'm a big lover of Napoleon. I'm a big lover of conquerors in general. Because I love the giant nutsack that it takes to get in a ship and be like, fuck it. I'm going to have this place. You're especially all pussies and I am about to conquer. Oh, and didn't he conquer?
But you know, well, the thing is, I got to see where his remains are allegedly at. And it's kind of, it's in Caen in France now. He was.
Yes.
But it's really funny because I had a haphazard fall actually right before I visited Mr. William. Yeah, gravity didn't play so nicely with me and Khan either. We'll just say it that way.
But, and I know I've heard of William the Conqueror, but that's about as far as it goes.
Well,
I've also taken a fall in Khan, but that's because of alcohol. So.
Well, just to let you know, slight amount about him. As mentioned, he was the first Norman King of England, and he reigned from about 1060 to or 66 to his death, September 9th, 1087. Interesting, my birthday. I wasn't born in 1087. I'm not a vampire.
All of
Virgos. But I'm a Virgo, which explains a whole lot with the research. So when he was 8 years old, his father passed away. So William inherited his father's titles. So because of this, in 1035, he became the Duke of Normandy, which then threw the region totally into anarchy. And his citizens were all pissed off to have this new and very young leader. So they decided to rebel. So as a response, he decided to order the village and the crops burned. And he burned everything to the ground, slaughtered animals, and left his people in poverty and starving. Hence why I'm saying kind of a jerk. But
yeah, that's the norm then. I mean,
But that earned him the nickname of William the Bastard. Now, I kind of like that nickname. I would be cool with it. It kind of sounds badass, right? A little bit?
Yeah, I would. I mean, especially during that time.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I know it's a terrible thing to be on his side, but I quite frankly don't care. Because if I was quelling a peasant uprising and be like, fuck you, watch this shit.
I'm actually glad I wasn't from that time, because I think I would be pretty ruthless. I think actually if it was me, I would probably just like, hey, you guys don't want to believe me as your leader? I'm just going to burn your shit and steal all of it. Now you're going to listen.
You sympathize. You understand him.
A little bit. I totally would do that, because back then it was about power and power kept you alive. So, and well, rich. So I would totally do it. But as the time passed, William was actually known to indulge in as much food and drink as he wanted while his people starved. So his gluttony. Right. Well, yeah, we know who. The gluttony that he had caused him to grow bigger and wider, which ultimately was leading to his death. So in 1087, my bad, William was riding with his horse and it unexpectedly reared up. Now, due to his large size, the saddle pushed into his abdomen and punctured his intestines. True story. So over the next 6 weeks, the doctors tried to save him, but due to his weight, surgery was unsuccessful. So he died of these injuries. So now normally a funeral could be arranged and it would always be done quickly by the loved ones because, you know, rotting bodies, there wasn't no embalming, all that stuff. So however, William wasn't that loved. So yeah, they just didn't get on that. So as a result, William's half-naked body just laid forgotten in a French medical facility until a traveling knight came by. William already started to decompose at this point. So this knight named Hurlin did his best to actually embalm the body, which nobody actually knew how to do properly at that time. But then he then loaded William onto a boat to make the 70-mile or about 112-kilometer trip to the church where William's body was to be buried. Now, during this incredibly slow trip, because back then everything was slow, the bacteria in the late king's intestine started to grow, and then it started to leak out of the corpse, gets worse,
Bethany, if anyone isn't seeing, yeah, to our listeners, you just have to see Bethany's face right now to fully appreciate this.
She's about to either look for a bucket or have a seizure. I'm not sure which.
Probably both.
But it's about to get worse. So now his tissues inside were starting to decompose at an alarming rate. It was warm, it was September, and it filled the body with gas. So what do you think happens when a body fills with gas? So when the body arrived at their destination, he found out that the funeral was delayed due to there was a fire that broke out in the city. So they had to wait some more time to, and now because the time he died to the time he was going to be buried, it was actually weeks after his death.
That's some bad juju.
It's about to get worse because another issue came up. The residual heat from the fire and the gas in the body further inflated William's bowels to make them even bigger. So when the grave diggers tried to lower him into the ground, he no longer fit in the grave. So they decided to try to squish him in there, just like push him down like a plunger in a toilet. And that's when William exploded. According to a chronicler at the time, William's, and I quote, swollen bowels burst, and an intolerable stench assailed the nostrils of the bystanders and the entire crowd. It is said that the mourners were so overwhelmed by the stench that when they finished the funeral as quickly as possible, and then they had to clean up because they were covered with rotten, well, William. So they had to scrape the William off. And at this time, though, people actually thought this was a good thing. Because firstly, now William could fit in that hole. And secondly, the mistreatment of the king's body gave people the feeling that karma slapped him in his face for the mistreatment that he did earlier. So, yeah, the moral of the story is embalm faster. Put them in the hole. They'll blow
up. I have a caption for this. Inglorious bastard.
Hashtag.
Yeah, I was going to say, the thing I take from this is a dead body and a dead body doesn't quite frankly care because he still had a hold over Normandy and then burned the shit out of a lot of things that people loved, including, you know, nobles in their homes in England. And doesn't maybe matter what is done with your body, because we still look at the Bayeux Tapestry at that stabby motion and kind of laugh.
Oh,
too.
That's a tapestry with like 72 penises, I think.
It, yeah.
Wait.
Super into it. I mean, it's just a cock slap of the eyes, if you will.
That's how we get Bethany into Bayeux.
Look at her face. Promise, she's in.
The promise of penis.
Now, ladies.
Penises are in there.
No, I mean, that's like my favorite, though, is the story of William. And I'm so glad that you chose to like, oh, God, because it's so horrific. But people are also like, oh, I'm a God, fuck this dude. But also it's like you're covered in the detritus of kings. So like at a time that people only took maybe a bath, you know, once every while, I think that it gave a little, it did a little for hygiene. You know, they had to bathe. They were covered in king.
Yep. Now,
king shit, literally.
When I researched that, that was the first thing I pulled out of it is, damn, that would force them to do more than one bath every month. But the other thought I had was actually, if I murder somebody, I better get them in the ground pretty quick because if I leave that body for a while, it just could explode, especially if it's a summer. But I actually take it one step further. If you just plant like rare flowers and stuff that are protected on it, they'll never find that body. It'll work out. Now, how?
No, they don't.
They should. That way you won't have to look find the body. But in William's situation, if you ever decide to kill someone, just get them in the ground real quick because otherwise, splat.
In a way, you kind of want to be like John Wayne Gacy. Get them all under your crawl space and in the dirt, right?
Yeah.
So in a way,
the mental image I have right now is like sticking a potato or something like that in a microwave and just
it was like that, Bethany.
Actually, I think that is like the perfect image to describe that.
When I was researching it, you know what I would think of is, you guys ever watch the HBO show True Blood?
Yes, I have.
You see where they stake a vampire? That's what I totally envision.
That's exactly what I think of. Oh my God. You're right. You're exactly right. I'm just picturing Jason Stackhouse like staking Franklin outside the bar right now. Yeah. And then them just trying to cover dirt over whatever was left. That's always how I imagine
it. Get a hose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, can wash it in.
So I actually also wanted to tell you about a guy, a little bit more modern times, since we're talking about possible not respecting a body after death. There was a guy named Graham Parsons, and I don't know if you guys have ever heard about him, because he's actually considered, there you go, Graham Parsons was actually considered to be a pioneer of both country music and rock. He was incredibly talented singer, songwriter, guitarist, and he was specialized in blending the sounds of folk, blues, and country, which is actually a precursor to Americana music. So,
Hashtag amazing, FYI, guys.
So I'm looking at these people like real time because I don't know these people. And
Graham Parsons, amazing.
Welcome to my history lesson of gross.
Yes.
So right before he died at the age of 26, Parsons was actually recording music for Reprise Records with several members of the band called TCB Band, which was led by a man named James Burton. Now, it was during this time that Parsons told his friends that he was recording with that he did not want a church funeral. Really important for upcoming and pretty quick. He said he wanted to have his ashes spread at the Joshua Tree National Park in California. But sadly, Parsons then died of a reported overdose soon after this. His body was actually discovered at room 8 of the Joshua Tree Inn. And it was seemed like, as a logistical standpoint, that it's going to be pretty easy for his friends to carry out his last wishes, right? Well, that didn't work out, because none of my stories work out well. Parsons' dad was a man named Bob, and Bob started to plan a funeral in Louisiana. So it is said that when he was just doing this as an attempt to get Parsons' money. So upon hearing this, Parsons' friends decided to come up with a click solution. It's really easy. Just steal their friend's body before it's flown out to Louisiana. So the friends decided to get a hearse. They drove it to the LA International Airport. They posed as mortuary workers, and they claimed that arrangements has now changed. So then these ground crew guys are like, yeah, that sounds like it makes sense. So then they took the body, they put it into the hearse, and they drove out the coffin out to the Joshua Tree Desert with a can of gas. And this was their plan. Yep. That's where their plan is going bad. Because there was a ban of fires at the park at the time. So somebody saw the flames of the coffin and, well, Parsons burning. And then they saw the smoke and they called the police department. So authorities came over. They arrested Parsons' friends. But since at the time there was no law on the books concerning stealing a body, they were charged with misdemeanor theft of a casket. So on November 5th, the judge fined them $300 each, and they ordered them to pay $750 for that damaged coffin. To recoup the costs, Parsons' friends then decided to throw what was called the Graham Parsons Funeral Party, which was hosted at one of the friends' homes. They had admission costs and the sale. They sold a whole bunch of Graham Parsons t-shirts, and the purchase of beer bottles that they relabeled as Graham Pilsner raised all the money to go and cover all their fines. So eventually, I know, it's great, right? So then Parsons' burnt-up corpse made its way to Louisiana. Parsons was interred in the Memorial Lawn Cemetery that's near New Orleans, and Parsons' friends then held a memorial at the Joshua Tree Park, where they placed an unofficial memorial. Now, what happened to the kind of corrupt dad? Well, he actually failed to get his money when he tried to sue in court. So,
fuck him.
So the moral of the story is, if you wanted to go and steal a body, you probably could get away with it. You just need to go make sure there's no burn bans.
That's true. Everything would have been okay if the cops hadn't shown up.
Mm-hmm.
I have given Bethany very explicit instructions as to how my funeral is to be carried out. And Brenda, since you're here with us, I want to add that caveat. One, do not take my body into a cemetery. I would like a Viking funeral, if you will. I don't really care if there's a burn ban, and since I'm from Roberts County, Texas, if any of you have wondered, it has 1,000 people in the county and 300 in the only town in it. Nobody's going to really object to my Viking funeral. Just, my parents will know where to go ahead and have it. And then I want the song I Love It by Iconopop featuring Charlie XCX. Yeah, I want that played.
I
want that played.
I love it. I love it.
I don't care. Exactly. I want that played on repeat. And then I'm going to need both of you to have a black dress, but I want hats with full length veils and umbrellas.
Oh my God. I'm going to have umbrellas to go Coven. You want us to be Coven, American Horror Story Coven. This is how it is.
Essentially, yeah, because I like to view myself as a witch if I believed in such, but if I didn't, I like to think of myself that way. So, yeah, I kind of agree with Graham Parsons' personal burn me at Joshua Tree funeral, only I would like you to all burn me in West Texas.
Well, it's actually funny you mentioned that, is because my best friend and I have planned our funerals for years.
Yes!
And so here's our plan. It's actually going to be whoever goes first, right? So mm-hmm. we are, mm-hmm. what the song on repeat, I can't remember the singer's name off the top of my head, but you know, it goes, we're here for a good time, but not for a long time. You know, you always hear that in club. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I'm going to mm-hmm. do. That song's going to be on repeat. And what's going to happen is, so my best friend's name is Dean, and Dean is going to be the one that does the eulogy, right? So he is going to be at the back of the room, and he is going to be dressed as a Grim Reaper with sickle. And then when they call him to do the eulogy, he goes up as the Reaper. And so the only one thing that can make this even better that we came up with is an open bar. Oh, with the crazy in my family, if I do an open bar, it is going to be like a cat fight you've never seen. So I was telling this to my aunt actually last week, and she's like, oh, honey, since I'm going before you, you and I are going to be sitting up in heaven looking down. I'll be looking at you, say, bitch, pass the popcorn. I'm like, exactly. If I'm going to go up, if I'm going out, I'm taking everybody with me. Just feed them some booze and boom.
I respect that so much, because there will also be an open bar at my Roberts County, Texas funeral. Because I feel like, one, somebody's going to get shot. Two, there may be some cattle rustling. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
There will be.
And you know what? If nobody gets shot at the funeral, you can go after the cattle rustlers. So, you know, somebody gets shot either way legally in the state of Texas. And I feel like that's when you've achieved Texas funeral status, when somebody accidentally gets kneecapped. So we've had our fun, we've had our super fun deaths, but what else do you have to talk about with us, Brenda?
What do you guys want to talk about? Do you want to talk about more dead people going out in blazes of glory, or do you want to talk about ways that we can take them out in blazes of glory?
Take out. Okay.
Takeout.
I kind of want to talk about a takeout.
Because here's the thing. I don't do the best research. I'm not the best at it. But when I was told that I needed to look up some torture devices, the only thing, and I repeat, the only thing that could
this
come
is amazing. This is amazing.
Is from The Princess Bride and The Pit of Despair. With the machine that takes off 50 years of your life expectancy.
Oh, I can do better than that. Now, the thing is, now we're going to get into, you think, okay, we were talking funny. Now we're going to go a little dark. But, you know, with that said, I always still find humor in darkness. So if I start laughing hysterically that, you know, like, say, limbs are being pulled apart, I apologize in advance. I don't have a normal sense of humor, if you haven't figured it out by now. But the deliberate act of inflicting physical or mental suffering on people as a form of punishment or to fill a twisted desire or to force action from a victim literally has been done from the beginning of time. And it still occurs today. It has been carried out by or sanctioned by individuals, groups, and states for many reasons, as everybody know, like punishment, revenge, extortion, persuasion, political action, coercion, you guess it, it's going to be in there. But usually a lot of times it's to get confessions, whether they're guilty or not, witch trials. So though torture is sanctioned today in some areas, believe it or not, it is actually prohibited under international law. That's my disclaimer. And under domestic law, most countries don't do it. It's widely illegal, and it's a major violation of the human rights, which makes it under not acceptable under Article 5 of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So just don't do it. Disclaimer.
Really quickly, can I add to that disclaimer, just so all of our American listeners know, because we're up 23% in the state of California, thanks to George Bush and a Cheney. You know, I'm old school. I don't bitch about the newer things. I haven't gotten over Bush yet. We very much violate that in the United States. We fucking love it. We love a little torture. Okay. We've been into it since the early days of the CIA.
In the bedroom, it's okay. Outside,
exactly right. A little spanking never hurt anyone in a sexual context. However, you know, waterboarding is less sexy, as Kara put it. It's less fun. categorically.
I'm just envisioning that, and yeah, no. I don't think that's good for me. Just saying.
I mean, the only advantage is that you're starting out wet. That's the only advantage.
Good, Bethany. What were you going to tell us? Because I'm dying.
I was just going to say, bring back the rack. I think I'm okay with anything else. Just the torture rack sounds absolutely.
Oh, the one where Bethany. Part your body.
Oh, really quickly.
I could do worse.
Brenda, are we going to get into a little of Fernando Neapolitan fun, if we will, in this?
I think I definitely can. I'm going to do a lot worse in the rack. So you need to strap in there, Bethany. Maybe get a bucket.
Yeah, she's gonna get. She's no, gonna. She's gonna take you down
to
Naples.
Tell her to strap in when we were talking about.
I told her to strap in, strap on, whatever you're into. But we are also gonna get down to Naples, Bethany, and let me tell you the shit she's gonna talk about to make you both laugh and cringe.
So I'm actually going to work you into it, Bethany, since you're just new to this world. But so basically, those who have studied the history of torture believe that violence occurs to serve just two functions. Who wants to guess what those functions are?
Power.
To make a goddamn point.
Pretty much, yeah. It's actually to do an investigation and produce a confession and to attack the human body as punishment. Just basically two things. Physical pain and suffering was not the only punishment that was received by these. Victims were forced to have to suffer public humiliation on top of physical abuse when the members of communities would show up to witness this in a public place. That was the goal, is to humiliate and cause pain, right? So right. A great example of this is the stocks, right? The traditional stocks. So basically, exactly. Stocks. So basically,
sorry, really quickly, can I tell viewers, like, Bethany had a curious look on her face and I literally put my head out and my hands out to like show that I was in the stocks. And she immediately went, oh, yes. I get that.
The thing that everybody wants to take pictures at like restaurants, festivals, like, look at me, Mom.
Well, what those were used for was people would be locked into them barefoot, and it was a restraining device that was used as a form of corporal punishment and specifically for public humiliation. So when they were locked into it, many times people would just, talking about feces earlier, many people would delight in rubbing human feces in their face and shove it into their mouth, because that sounds like it's cool, right? The victims were insulted. They were insulted. They were spat on. They were subjected to any inhumane acts, Bethany, that you can come up with, while their ankles and wrists were trapped by placing boards around and locking them in. Use your imagination.
Including being rapey as fuck. Okay,
I didn't say that, but you kind of get that. Yeah, rapey.
Well, so, I wanted to paint the picture for her so she knew how terrible.
So the word that, now you think this is bad, but for some it actually got worse, because they put them in what's called a pillory. So a pillory is where the boards were affixed to a pole and placed around the victim's arms and neck and forced them to stand. So the original stocks, you were sitting or kneeling, and then the pillory, you're standing. So imagine, you actually are there for days. No food, no water, mouthful of feces. What do you think's going to happen, right? So the earliest documentation that he uses of stocks is actually in the Bible. It's in the Acts of the Apostles, where the Bible tells about the treatment of Saul and Silas, who were disciples of Jesus, and it depicts them being in prison and having their feet put in stocks. So in the Old Testament of Job, stocks are also mentioned by referring that God says, he puts my feet in stocks, he watches all my paths. So that is literally one of the earliest documentation of the use of stocks, is, believe it or not, in the Bible. But they were used...
Sorry, I'm looking it up because I was just curious. The pillory does look a lot like a crucifix.
A little bit, yeah. So the stocks were actually used regularly by both military and civilian authorities from medieval to modern times. So public punishment in stocks were considered very common from the 1500s to at least 1748. So this was actually really popular with the Puritans, and they used this as a way to punish not what they considered a sin, but they considered to be a lower class of them. But they also use this as a restraining tool for people going to trial. So let's just imagine they see you stealing a chicken. You're locked in that until they decide to give you a trial. So, wow. Right. Oh, so in England, the Statute of Laborers in 1351 recommended the use of stocks for unruly artisans and required every single town and village to actually set up a set of stocks. So documentation indicates that these were used in England for over 500 years. And then technically, this was actually never abolished. It's still on the books. So here in Canada, where I'm at, the court records show from 1811 that the building of stocks was required here in Canada. And in Spain, conquistadors introduced the stocks as a popular form of punishment and humiliation against those who they thought impeded their growth within the New World. They actually also used as late as the 19th century in Latin America to punish indigenous miners who rebelled against their bosses. So let's describe these a little bit, since you're looking on the internet with a weird face and a look on your face. The stocks were actually specifically made to immobilize the victims and expose them to public humiliation, the worst that people could come up with. It's a wooden device. It has an opening between the two boards, which in the victim's hands and sometimes their feet was pushed through it. The limbs would then be chained, and there was an additional hole for a person to put their head in, which also would be passed through planks and then chained down. Then they would be left out, exposed to the elements in the public place to be further humiliated with the poop in the mouth. And sometimes the victims were actually left there for days and days, and this resulted in their death from dehydration, starvation, or exposure, even though the goal wasn't to kill them, just humiliate them. So since it wasn't meant to kill, quote unquote, it usually was reserved for those who committed crimes that wasn't actually serious, like stealing a chicken. So think about it. You're thrown in the stocks, and it's actually, like, let's just say, okay, you pissed off your neighbor and you trespassed on his land. Stocks. Jaywalk. Stocks. You know, it wasn't even for bad stuff.
Right now, you walk into a place without a mask. Stocks.
Stocks. You're not.
So, you're, think about.
No, you sneeze.
Stocks.
You wore a fucking ugly hat. Stocks.
Fashion crime.
I will say, Brenda, when I'm looking at these pictures, the one thing that I, because these are obviously depictions of like what actually happened, but I will notice that you said that they chain their arms or their hands and sometimes their feet, and they aren't actually showing that in the drawings and the pictures and stuff like that. I found that interesting that when you just look at it, that, like, what the way you said it just kind of adds more to the picture I'm looking at. I'm like, okay, well, this is wrong. It's missing the chains. Okay.
Well, it really depended on it, like what it was. Like, for example, if your legs and your arms are really caught in there, they didn't feel the need. But if you want to be a real jerk about it, let's just put some weight on you and add chains to you. Or if you want to increase the torture, imagine if you're standing there for days, what would make it worse? Add more weight, add more pressure. So let's just chain you up. Twist that real tight, add like, you know, another 20 pounds of chain and see what happens. But again, that's only if you like jaywalk. So that's not that bad. But that's where I want to bring up the worst crimes. So if you're doing something worse, Bethany, you got the rack.
Da, da, da. Yes. Da, da, da. I was trying to explain the rack to Bethany. So this is going to be fun.
So the rack is a torture device that consists of a wooden frame that's raised off the ground. There's a roller at one or both of the ends. So the victims...
I did see that there are forms of the rack where they're hung and suspended above their head. So I always thought it was the thing that you would, like the stretcher, you know, because I wanted to get taller. I was like, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I can get.
Oh, Jesus.
No. Well, actually, you can do that healthcare wise, but it consists of you re-breaking your limbs and letting them calcify. So I'm thinking that's a bad idea.
Basically, it's the most non-sexy. What was that 50 Shades of Grey you ever fucking saw? All right. Like,
50 Shades of Grey was a little inaccurate.
a little bit, because dangling from a ceiling is a hell of a thing.
That's not sexy in the rack. No. So the victim's ankles were usually attached to one roller and their wrists were attached to the other. And so they're going to start to interrogate you. And as that progresses, the rollers are turned real slow, which retracts the chains and increases the strain on your joints and your muscles and your knees.
Oh, the popping.
And then it's going to start to cause pain because, well, you're literally ripping your joints apart, right? So here's the best part about it. So the roller can actually be rotated on a mid-axis, which will then, when you twist it slightly, will automatically cause those joints to dislocate.
Her face, guys, you didn't see it. Oh, her face was amazing. Bethany's face was fucking amazing. Oh, my God.
You might want to plug your ears.
I had a mental image of that, so it gets
worse.
It's going to get hashtag worse.
Yep. With time, the muscle fibers are going to be stretched to a point that they no longer can make contact, so they're useless. So what do you think that happens? When the torture is continuing, exactly, people start hearing popping noises, which is the victim's cartilage, their ligaments, and their bones starting to snap. Now, most interesting for me about this is a popular way to put pressure on prisoners to confess was to bring them down to see somebody else on the rack. So when you've seen somebody in the rack and you're thinking you're going to go on that, they not only watch the effects of the machine, but the victims who are on the rack would also get burnt on their flanks, aka the butt, have their fingernails and their toenails pulled out, and they would take slivers of hot coals and shove them under the what's left of their fingernails. That would be enough to make anybody confess to anything. And that's really why they got a lot of the confessions that they did, like, for example, in the witch trials. Who in the hell would want to go through that?
Spanish Inquisition as well.
Exactly.
Screw you, whatever you want. Just don't
put things under my fingernails. I'll just tell you whatever. So the rack was actually first created before writing was invented, so it's not clear on which civilization or where who came up with this crazy idea. But some of the earliest examples were from Greece, and it's believed that the Greeks may have been the first to use the rack as a way to torture their slaves and who they considered to be non-citizens. But it was also famously used to get a confession, however that whoever you wanted to get a confession from. History says that the rack was used in an attempt to extract names of those who conspired to assassinate Emperor Nero. Spoiler alert, that was pretty well every single person that lived there at the time.
It was that ever lived in Rome ever.
They're like, we don't like them. It was also documented being used on early Christians such as St. Vincent and St. Jerome. So The first rack appeared in England in 1447 due to a man named John Holland, who was the second Duke of Exeter. And that is why...
He's such a fucking treat of a human being, let me tell you.
Well, that's why the rack, a.k.a., is known as the Duke of Exeter's daughter.
Know that.
Yep, that's why, because he was a duke.
Think about what a guy that must be to have that torture device.
Named after him, yeah. So remember how I said the stocks weren't for serious crimes, but the rack was? So here's a good example of this. So there was a 25-year-old Protestant martyr who was named Anne Askew, and she lived in about 1446.
Right. Yes, goddamn, this one's rough. Okay, sorry.
Meanwhile, Bethy's, okay, now I'm interested. What the hell happened to her? Was her bones pulled apart? What's going on? So Anne was the daughter of a guy named Sir William Askew, who was a knight in Lincolnshire. So she was tortured on the rack before she was burnt on the stake. Why? Well, Anne did the crime of speaking the scriptures when women weren't allowed to do that. And she would not profess that the sacraments were literally flesh and blood. Like, you know, the cookie and the wine.
Jesus's actual body.
Yeah, you're not eating and drinking Jesus, like, if you will.
this is like some serious red wine and a cookie. And they're like, no, it's not. It's Jesus. Rack time. Basically, that's it in a nutshell. How dare, how dare she say the sacraments? What the hell? Who did she think she was? So
she had titties. What, where does she get off?
I know. So the damage on her was considered to be so severe that she actually had to be carried on a chair to be burnt at the stake. Now, in places like Russia, the rack was actually a bit different than the you know, some people were up and down, right? So the trap, the actually it's, was different, but it had the same effects. Their device was a gallows-like event that suspended the people in the air. People were whipped and burnt with torches. So there is different versions of it depending on location. Now, to make it even better, if you got to the rack, you aren't going anywhere, because every time you turn that little crank, your limbs would pull apart. And basically what was considered is when your bones broke, your mind would break at the same time. So it's most common for the limbs to dislocate and break on the rack, but that actually wasn't the worst thing that would happen to you. So literally, what would happen if you crank and crank and crank, since Bethany's ready to throw up, what do you think happens? Pretty much. Your limbs will drip off. Your limbs will
drip off. It's like being slow version of drawn and quartered.
So your limbs would rip off and then you'd bleed out pretty quickly, which in that time, it's actually a good thing. But this could be worse. How do you make a rack worse? Well, you add spikes to it.
Naturally.
It's a natural progression.
So when you rotate that wheel on the bottom, those spikes just slowly go up and enter your spinal column. So if you are able to get off the rack, the damage to your body, your limbs, if they still are attached, it wouldn't paralyze you, but the damage to your spine would. And if you're lucky to get off, well, you're not going to walk off. With all the damage that you have to your muscles and your tendons,
it's not a walk off football.
You're going to be if you walk away from it, pun intended, you're going to be a quadriplegic. There's just no way. But there's worse than that out there.
Wait.
It gets worse.
It can get worse.
Of course it fucking can.